and Beyond card, as well as the books Inclusive Transportation, Better Buses, Better Cities, and Patty Wien's book That Will Never Work Here. And those are just some of the truly excellent examples of incentives when you pledge here to 101.5 UMFM during Pledgerama. Are you ready to support community radio? Are you ready to support more inclusive voices? If you are, give us a call at 204-474-6610 or go to umfm.com/donate. If you love listening to us, our station, or just the show, please support us here as we are, the station is looking to expand its news outreach and bring stories that you can listen to. Why not support us? Give us a call. Support us here today at 204-474-6610 or go online to umfm.com/donate for more. And you can help contribute to our station, and your contribution goes a long way to help make our station very much stronger here. And lastly, I just want to play last clip of the day here. I want to play a clip from the two co-hosts of Bike Talk that came on the show in February, and they talk a lot about how cycling challenges the structure of transportation. And have a listen to this.
I mean, there's so many ways you could go, really. But I think that the biggest way is that it's not set up for bikes, and therefore you are going against the system. And you feel that if whenever you go anywhere on a bike.
Yeah, that's certainly in the last, what, 60 years. But as we know, the bike was the first thing on, the first thing to do paved roads and all that kind of stuff. But even then it was political because people who rode bikes, people who had horses were, against people on bikes. And so bikes have always been a little bit of what a flamethrower when it came to upsetting the status quo.
Yeah, it seems like it's always like, especially how our cities are designed, where the automobile is the priority for city plans. It always seems like cycling is always seems to be this little, I guess, pain in the butt for a lot of transportation planners and just like the automobile industry, where it's like, and just terms of it's one of the few vehicles or one of the few ways to get around is accessible for everyone and reduces pollution and financially equitable for everyone. And which makes it a challenge to how our cities are designed largely in part through by the heavy construction and automotive industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick and I do this podcast, Bike Talk, and we had Jody Rosen on the show. And Jody Rosen wrote this book called Two Wheels Good: The Mystery and History of the Bicycle. And he talked a lot about this idea that bikes came along very late in the development of machinery and transportation. I mean, it wasn't until the late 1800s, 1880s, when the penny farthing was invented, the great big front wheel of the bicycle and the small back wheel. And then it took another 10 years to get the drivetrain. And I remember asking him at the time if he thought that that was part of the reasoning of why there was this animosity toward bikes and toward people on bikes. And I remember him saying that had occurred to him also, that something about the evolution of transportation, the bikes were late, putting one wheel in front of the other wheel as opposed to two wheels side by side, that maybe that had something to do why there was this animosity to bikes. So I think it might even, Adam, go further back than just our roads are built for cars, and now the bicycle is an interloper in that environment.
That was Nick Reichhardt and Taylor Nicholas, the two co-hosts of Bike Talk, talking why cycling is political and how it transforms the transportation system or challenges the transportation system, something that you don't often hear in corporate radio. And why we here at Not Necessarily the Automobile here at 101.5 UMFM are very proud to continue to be a strong pillar in community radio and discussing these news stories that don't get covered a lot. And that is our Pledgerama edition here of Not Necessarily the Automobile. Thank you very much for listening. And like I said, please continue to support community radio, support UMFM as it works towards supporting stronger news here in the community. You can definitely call the Pledgerama line at 474 6610 or go to umfm.com/donate, and any contribution can help go a long way to make our station stronger. And like I said, many incentives that the station's giving out, you can go online to check that out. For us, for $5, if you pledge that, you'll get a shout out on a future episode and be a guest. For $15, you'll be entered into the draw for a $20 Pago card. And for $20, you'll be entered into the draw for a $25 Bikes and Beyond gift card. And for $40, you'll be entered a draw for the $20 Pago card, $20 Bikes and Beyond gift card, as well as some books, including Inclusive Transportation, Better Buses, Better Cities, and I Will Never Work Here. And just keep in mind, that those will be mailed out to the winner, or I will, as always, contact the winner personally to arrange the prize pickups. So feel free, reach out to us, and we encourage you to support Community Radio here.
I love the radio. Yes, I love the radio. I love the radio. Yes, I love the radio. I love you, the radio. I love you too, the radio.
You're listening to CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg, Manitoba, your hit-free radio station, in case you didn't notice.
The radio, the radio, the radio.
This is a Surgeon General's warning.
CJUMFM 101.5. 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves. This is the Democracy Now! Takeover for Pledgerama 2026. And that was Budapest Band New Fossils with Billy off of Ecosphere, brand new jazz record recommended to me by my pal Nils Vik. And it is International Jazz Day, amongst other things happening in the world. And so I thought I'd go with an international jazz act. Speaking of jazz, we had Curtis Nowosad on yesterday as a lead up to his appearance at the Jazz Winnipeg Festival. We got more tickets to give away to the Jazz Festival. We'll get into the details about that a little later, but I will talk about details about Pledgerama 2026. Our goal, $34,000. We're over $29,000 right now. We're getting closer to our goal of $34,000. The Pledgerama runs until tomorrow at 8 p.m., and we are preempting all the syndicated programming, including Democracy Now! If you want to listen to Democracy Now!, 51 weeks of the year, we broadcast it during the noon hour. But this is the 1 week of the year, but we have to give out the phone line, 204-474-6610, and the website, umfm.com/donate. You can go, speaking of websites, to democracynow.org, that's O-R-G, to stream each day's episode this week. We'll be back in Monday at noon with the regular Amy Goodman. You'll be done with me for another year, but we are not done with Pledgerama. Coming up in just a few minutes, I'm going to be talking to Catherine Clement, the curator and author of a new exhibit opening tomorrow at the Manitoba Museum called The Paper Trail to the 1923 Chinese Exclusion Act. She's doing an author's talk to launch the event. That'll be running for a while at the Manitoba Museum, but you're one opportunity to hear from Catherine herself, other than right away here on this show, is tomorrow night. We'll get into the details of that in a few minutes, but I should mention that we've got a whole bunch of great pledge incentives. In addition to your support for the station and knowing that this radio station that you know and love continues to operate over the course of the next year, we've got all sorts of great incentives, starting at the $25 level with button stickers, a magnet, and an enamel pin. At the $50 level, we have a coffee mug, a new coffee mug this year. If you want to see the great designs that Brady Freeze did, you can head over to umfm.com/donate/incentives to see them there. Or if you're on Instagram, @friendsofumfm has images of those as well. We have two t-shirt designs this year. Those are at the $75 level, your choice of one of the two designs. There's a three-eyed tiger and something we're calling Radio Town. Hard to choose between the two. If I don't want to make the choice, I can pledge $250, and then I get two t-shirts, two coffee mugs, a UMFM tumbler, a UMFM long sleeve, and a hoodie. $250, significant amount of money, but if you split it up over the course of a year, it's about $20.50 a month. We can do installment plans. You can select that on the website, and you can also talk to a smooth operator and get the details if you call 204-474-6610. So we will get into a little bit more music. We'll get Catherine Clement on the phone, and we will talk about the paper trail to the 1923 Chinese Exclusion Act. That's coming up in just a few minutes. In the meantime, this is Holy Hum with Space and Time off of the 2017 record, All of My Bodies.
Holy hand, holding on.
From BC and now in Brooklyn, that is Holy Hum with Ready to Have It, or pardon me, with Space and Time off of the 2017 album All of My Bodies. Playing that because the artist wrote it in tribute to a relative who was an immigrant to Canada from China, and that brings me to the topic of my guest today, and that is the exhibit at the Manitoba Museum starting tomorrow, The Paper Trail to the 1923 Chinese Exclusion Act. Catherine Clement, the curator, joins me on the program. Welcome.
Hello, Michael. Thank you for your interest and for helping me share this story.
My pleasure. So speaking of sharing this story, what led you to this story? How did you first start? Because this obviously, like, the exhibit in Vancouver was for the centenary, but it obviously started as a thing well before that in order to happen.
It started quite by accident, in fact. So I'm half Chinese, and with a Chinese mother, and never really had very much interest in my Chinese history in Canada. And in fact, it was never talked about at home at all. But back in around 2010, I started interviewing Chinese Canadian veterans. And really what I was interested in was not the fact that they were Chinese Canadian. I was interested in hearing about the experience, the lived experience of being in war. And while I was interviewing them, and I would ask them, show me some of your photographs or some of your things, you know, that you have left. And they would bring out little shoeboxes and albums. And I kept seeing these cards. And it was usually a card of them as a young child. And they would have told me that I was born in Vancouver, I was born in Calgary or whatever, but they pulled out an immigration card and they were all stamped around the same period of time, 1923, 1924. And I had no idea what I was looking at and I didn't pay much attention to it, I must confess. But it was only years later that I realized that those were part of the kind of documentary evidence of a really unprecedented and monumental chapter in Canadian history that has almost been forgotten, even by the community that was most impacted by it. And that was it was officially called the Chinese Immigration Act of 1923, but the community dubbed it the Cruelty Act and also gave it the name of the Exclusion Act. And it meant what it said, it was exclusion.
So these documents that the veterans pulled out, these are the ones that are marked with the poppies in the display, that these are the, like, childhood images, and then there's a poppy to demonstrate that they served?
Yes, because it's interesting. So the little cards were not just issued by the Department of Immigration to a Canadian-born child. The bottom of the card read, "This certificate does not establish legal status in Canada." And Canadian-born Chinese children have been the only group of Canadian-born children that have ever been given an immigration card with that line. It was the way to symbolically exclude them from being Canadian. They were considered aliens, basically.
So you find this kind of tangential to the research about the wartime efforts of the Chinese Canadians, and like at what point does the penny drop that this is an exhibit or a pursuit in and of itself?
Oh well, that started when I thought I had finished up another major crowdsource project. So a lot of my work is crowdsourcing. I'm interested in memory. I'm interested in things held in private drawers and shoeboxes and things like that, and how those things give us an idea of the experience of history from the viewpoint of not leaders and wealthy people, but from ordinary common people. And so I thought, since I had seen so many of these, and I've seen other ones that are called head tax certificates, et cetera, I thought I was going to do an exhibition on photography, because each one has a photo, and I would call it Portraits of Exclusion. But as I began to collect these or scan these from across Canada, every time somebody would hand me one, I would say, tell me the story about the person in this photo. Tell me what were their experiences during exclusion. I would get 95% of the Chinese Canadian families I dealt with gave me a blank stare. And said, are you talking about the head tax? Or they'd say, I know nothing. Nothing was ever spoken about. What is this Exclusion Act? And it was then that I realized I was in for a much different journey. And I thought, if the 100th anniversary, if there ever was a time to find out what really happened, what was the experience of exclusion, it would be now. And that sent, it was crazy. Like I wound up working with a history professor at UBC, and he gave me a whole bunch of his best students to work with me. And we combed through newspapers, all the Chinese newspapers in the period that exclusion was, which was 1923 to 1947, all the English newspapers, looking daily what stories we could find. We went to all kind of community archives. We went to trial records, court records. We asked the Government of Canada, the Library and Archives of Canada, to release all the Exclusion Act records, which they had held in behind a locked gate for over almost 100 years. And we asked for those documents to be given back to the community, to be opened up for public viewing. And then it was whatever breadcrumbs of memories families could tell us, like little things they might have heard their grandfather say that kind of gave us a glimpse into what was the lived experience of this time. And altogether, that wound up becoming a huge exhibition in Vancouver, which opened on July 1st, 2023, because the act was actually brought in, the Chinese Exclusion Act, on July 1st, 1923, chosen specifically Dominion Day, Canada Day, to bring it in, to send a message. And so it very much, yeah, focused on not so much the act, it's very dry to read, and but on all this, all these stories. And it was interesting because all these things like these immigration certificates and head tax certificates, thousands and thousands of these were issued. And in fact, Library and Archives Canada told me that no other group of immigrants on an individual level were as heavily documented as the Chinese. And thousands of these were issued, almost, I would say 90% have been destroyed because they were hated so much. They were symbolized as kind of surveillance and control over Chinese. So each one we found was special. But in many ways, the fact that the government so heavily documented the Chinese, there was a silver lining to it in that it allowed us an entry point to understand this history. We got to see things like photos and written documents on people that have been sitting there for 100 years, unseen. And so that's why we call it the paper trail, because it's this paper that helps us when there is nothing to remember. It's what allows us a bit of that memory, a bit of insight.
Right. Now, you mentioned the Library and Archives, like this has been kept from the public, and you know, requested it and got it. Was that because of like the like shameful nature of this period? Like, was it kind of hidden purposefully, or is this just like stashed in a drawer and forgotten because it was like, you know?
I don't think it was forgotten. I think they were concerned because it was a lot of personal information on these documents. And when I speak about these documents, so part of the Exclusion Act was not just an outright ban on further immigration of Chinese. It's the only time in Canadian history that's ever been done that a single group was banned from coming. But the other thing about the Exclusion Act is it required every single Chinese person in Canada at that time to be registered. And many of them had to actually go into RCMP detachments, and they had to bring in photos of themselves and all their paperwork They had to answer a barrage of questions. And this is where these young veterans who were children at the time wound up getting these immigration cards, because it was part of this mass mandatory registration. And but there's a lot of personal information on there too, a lot of comments that the government made. And the way they framed it was that these were held under privacy laws. But our argument was, it's 100 years, this anniversary is coming up, and in the interest of reconciliation to this one community, we feel it's time now to let the descendants actually see these documents. And they were fascinated, because they were like a snapshot of a community just before it descends into its darkest hours. And so it's just a treasure trove and gold mine of stories and information. And then a number of our stories we got through these forms and some of the type information on them that led us to follow someone's paper trail and discover what actually happened to them.
When you're presented with a treasure trove of information, as you put it, then how do you sift through it to then curate the exhibit as it exists then?
Well, I always tell people that when Library and Archives Canada, they gave me an early version of these 56,000 documents on the head tax, on the Exclusion Act registration. But they gave it to me as a data dump, and it was 56,000 JPEGs in no particular order. And I thought, oh my God, how am I going to deal with, like, how am I going to find anything? And that was one of the reasons I needed all these UBC students to work with me. But the silver lining to that, again, was that as I was looking for somebody, I would stumble upon somebody else. And this is where we began to see some of the despair this act caused, in that we started to find during the people had a year to register. And all hell breaks loose. All of a sudden, a lot of people are starting to leave, a lot of the really old men. We find so many stories about suicide of men who had been here like 30, 40 years in Canada. And, you know, they had suffered through all the isolation and the racism and often poverty, because they would, you know, they barely eked out a living. But they hung on 30, 40 years. This act comes in, and this is what brings them to their knees. And they take their lives. And then we find all these men also that wind up just losing it. Like they develop these severe mental health issues, and they wind up in what they called back then insane asylums. And they're all, a lot of them are coming in that 1 year, and there's the records say, we know nothing about him. He hasn't spoken a single word in the time that he's been here. So you see the carnage that it creates, right? This act, but nobody remembers this.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these men had no descendants left here. So they, you know, their stories truly went silent, but we found them because of those 56,000 JPEGs in no particular order. Had I been able to find someone directly, I would have gone directly to their record, but I had to wade through, and that's, yeah, what seemed like a real obstacle became one of the biggest blessings of this project.
You mentioned, you know, combing through newspapers for any mentions, and you showed me shared a video of the exhibit in Vancouver, and like the glaringly racist headlines.
Yes.
And, you know, it's particularly interesting to read those in the context of what's going on in the U.S. right now, and to see, like, let's not pat ourselves on the back, because we have a history of this, too.
Yes. One of the most powerful newspaper headlines was actually just before the Exclusion Act came in. And it was the front page of the Victoria Times, colonists, and it read, must bar Orientals, plural, completely to say BC for the white race. They didn't, this is the government speaking, and they didn't couch their, you know, their intent. They were full on, like, this is what we want. And, but in that article, it actually says, you know, they're advocating and to bar, you know, Chinese, Japanese, South Asians from Canada, but 7 months later, it's only the Chinese. And what's interesting for me, coming from British Columbia, being half Asian, is it's actually British Columbia was the worst province. The most Chinese were living there. And it to me was like the Mississippi of Canada, the worst of, I never thought, you know, I knew there was some things that happened in history that were racist, but to actually see these headlines and to see government documents that actually talk about how they're feeling towards Asians and Chinese in particular, and the policies that they had, you know, they in British Columbia, Chinese had to sit at the back of the buses. Chinese couldn't swim in public pools. Just the things that we think about as being in the deep South that affected the Black American community were played up here too, happened here. And so it was interesting. And it was actually BC that advocated for the head tax to begin with when the railroad was finished and they wanted to get all these Chinese men who had built the tracks in BC out of Canada, but to also see that they were the ones that really pushed for total exclusion. And I guess it's partly because, as I said, of the 56,000 Chinese who registered, we know that about, you know, just over 31,000 are living in British Columbia. And so, you know, the experience on the prairies wasn't quite so bad, although there are, we've heard of stories of what happens to people on Chinese on the prairies. But the worst of it was in BC.
So obviously the exhibit opened in 2023 in BC. You've moved it now here to Winnipeg. So like you said, the what happened in BC, but there's echoes in the prairies. The moving the exhibit here to the Manitoba Museum, it's a smaller version of it. And I'm curious about kind of tailoring it to the space or figuring out what translates or what comes from that exhibit in 2023. How did you go about those decisions?
Well, I had to think about, okay, what is the essence of the story that I need to communicate? And so we're doing it over two small rooms in the Manitoba Museum Discovery Room and the Urban Corridor. And really what I wound up doing is dividing the story into two. The first room, the Discovery Room, which is near the entry, is really looking at the coming of the Exclusion Act, like why it was brought in, the fight against it, because the community did try to fight against it, and then looking at the lived experience of it. So we have these little index card drawers. So we tried to keep the stories very intimate in your experience with them. So we have a number of stories where we actually look at what happened to people, whatever we could gather, right? As I said, they're breadcrumbs, fragments of memories, but they give us some sense of what happened to people. But in the other room, which is the urban corridor, which is really the exit after you've gone through, you know, all the rest of the museum, really looks at the aftermath of it. So I used to think, well, once it was over, right? It ended 2 years after the war, and partly because of Chinese Canadians serving in the war, despite having immigration cards, and some of them losing their lives, and they became part of a really big advocacy movement to repeal the act and to actually gain for the first time Canadian citizenship. That was in 1947. But that other one just shows that even when it's over, the damage that it did lingered on for at least another 30, 40, 50 years. And that was in how, and I remember this when I was growing up, how many men, what we call bachelor men, they were often married, but had spent almost all their lives here, usually poor, usually laborers, and how for them exclusion never ended. It became a life sentence. They wound up never going back to China, never bringing their families here, dying alone, very few being remembered because they had no descendants. And, you know, they appear often in other people's photo albums and memories. But so that was one of the things. And we look at a few bachelors, including one that came out of Manitoba. And then we also look at the challenges around family reunion. If you've spent 40 years of your life separated from your family and finally get a chance to reunite, there's all these complications. It's really hard sometimes for a family to bond or for children to bond with fathers they've never met or, you know, met only once. And just what that does and the lasting impact of that fracture. So that's the end of the story, but it's just showing that there's a wake that's left from this boat.
The ripples. It reminds me of like intergenerational trauma related to the like school, residential schools, right? Like that there's echoes of like mistreatment by the Canadian government and the fact that this is kept quiet for a while. And then now the stories are kind of coming out.
But that, so this is, again, the silence of that generation, the generations that lived through it, was the silence was deafening. Like, it just was so profound. And I remember asking a couple of people, they were still alive at the time I interviewed them. And one of them said to me, she said, you know, Catherine, you have to remember, like, I asked her, why didn't you ever tell your kids this? Like, this is important, right? This is part of our origin story here. And she said, you have to remember, Catherine, we have been targeted for so long that as soon as we could, all we wanted to do was blend in. In fact, we just wanted to disappear and not even be noticed anymore. And another fellow said to me, he said, you know, I was afraid that if I told my daughter, like, I didn't want to undermine her confidence. I thought if she didn't know, it wouldn't affect her, right? That it was actually an act of love not to tell her what had been, you know, just a few years before she was born. And so when I heard that, I think I for the first time understood and felt less frustrated that they had not shared these things with us. But now it's up to our generation, the generations that come after, to tell this story, although there's so much that's been lost and we can never recover it. As I said, I work with memory, but there's some things are gone for good. They went when people passed away.
Yeah. Now the exhibit starts at the Manitoba Museum tomorrow. It runs for a while, but you're going to be in town doing a author talk to launch this tomorrow. If you can give us the details.
Yes. The Manitoba Museum has their free Friday tomorrow. And so, yes, the exhibition will be opening, at 6:30 tomorrow. I'll be doing my one and only talk in Manitoba, and we'll really talk about this whole journey and go into this story in a lot more depth and breadth, and share some of the stories, the more details of the stories we have found, and also how we came out of this. It's really it's eye-opening. It sits with people, or like that's what's happened in other places we've gone. Like I didn't know that. And last night I was out with a Chinese Canadian family, Winnipeg family, and they were saying to me, "Ah, oh, we've never heard any of this, and yet our dad, you know, our grandfather lived through this. He was born into this. He served in the war. This is something totally new to us." So I keep on reminding people, though, this is not just a Chinese Canadian story. This is a Canadian story. This is Canadian history. This is part of our country's history, and it's worth hearing about it, because you see the echoes of it right now going on south of the border. And some of the things that I'm reading is like, I've read that before in a newspaper from 1923.
Yeah, or even some of the reactions to the temporary foreign workers program here in Canada, and that, like, you know, there's other groups who are being targeted. And like you said, you know, this ended up just being for Chinese people, but that South Asian, that there were other immigrant folks who were working in Canada that they wanted to exclude too. Like that this is, this is one specific story, but it has a universal application, or at least translates.
Yes. So it's, there's a lot of application of the story to other groups. Although Chinese were the only ones ever totally banned from immigration, or whoever had to pay the head tax as they did. So,
So that's 6:30 tomorrow night at the Manitoba Museum.
Yes, in the auditorium on the lower level, and it's free, and like to get as many people out as possible, since I'll only be here once.
Right. Yeah. Well, Catherine, thanks for telling a smaller portion of the story that you'll tell tomorrow night here on air. We really appreciate you making time today.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
The paper trail to the 1923 Chinese Exclusion Act runs at the Manitoba Museum. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back here on 101.5 UMFM.
The Yomsu Service Center is your one-stop shop for all the information on campus. If you've got questions about the university or UMSU, the UMSU Service Center is the spot to get all the information you seek. We've got the 411 on university-related matters, referrals, and directions to office locations and more. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. Come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of UMSU University Center. Call us at 204-474-8211 or email us at umsu@umsu.ca.
Old Gold Vintage Vinyl Record Shop, located at 187 Osborne, inside Urban Waves, is Winnipeg's newest and most diverse record shopping experience. Whether you're a veteran collector questing for collectibles and obscurities, or new to the world of vinyl and looking for some classic titles, there's something for everyone at Old Gold Vintage Vinyl. With thousands of titles on LP and 45 in genres spanning rock, soul, funk, jazz, blues, reggae, and more, plus new arrivals being added each week means there's always something to discover. Follow at VintageVinyl204 on Instagram and search for Old Gold Vintage Vinyl Winnipeg on Facebook for the latest on what's new in store. And remember, we're always buying, selling, and trading quality LPs, so call 204-475-2353 or drop by the store at 187 Osborne. Old Gold Vintage Vinyl, because old gold is as good as new.
101.5 UMFM. You're tuned into Pledger. I'm a 2026. It is the Democracy Now! Takeover. Once a year, I do this from noon till 1 p.m. Monday through Friday. Normally, you hear Amy Goodman during this hour. However, as wonderful as she and the program are, we can't get her to give out the pledge line, and that is 204-474-6610. That's why we take over this week. To allow us to do what we do the rest of the year, we do it this week. Our goal is $34,000. We're getting ever closer to it. We're over the $29,000 mark, so that means we're in the home stretch here, but we're also in the home stretch in terms of time to do it in. The Pledgerama runs until tomorrow night at 8 p.m. You can pledge online at umfm.com/donate. We got a whole bunch of incentives. New designs by Brady Fraser, Studio 596. You can check out his work. If you follow us on Instagram at Friends of UMFM, you can see some of the imagery there. But you can also go to umfm.com/donate/incentives and see the designs there. Two different t-shirts this year. Not one, but two t-shirts. So your choice if you pledge at the $75 level. Your choice if you pledge at the 101.5, that's the $101.50 level, where you can choose between one of the two t-shirts or a UMFM tumbler. This is a new product this year, kind of a combination coffee mug slash thermos. It'll keep the cold stuff cold if you slip a can in, or it'll keep the hot stuff hot if you pour your coffee into it. Science. I don't understand science. That said, we're going to have someone in tomorrow who understands science, Dr. John McGavick from the Bannatyne campus. He's going to be in as a guest, as well as Dr. Robert Beatty, I believe. Hopefully they can inform me as to how this tumbler works. Maybe that's not their field of science. I know that Dr. Robert Beatty deals with polar bear DNA. We'll get into that. That's tomorrow from noon to 1 p.m. But I digress. You can get the both t-shirts if you want at the $250 level. Now, certainly $250 is a significant chunk of change, but you can spread it out over the course of a year. It's about $20.50 a month if you make your pledge for a monthly installment. We can do whatever installment plans you want, or you can pay all at once. You can pay by credit card, Visa, MasterCard. You can pay by e-transfer. You can drop off cash or check. The office is open during Pledgerama. Come on down. I brought my N64 in if you want to play some NHL 99 or some Kobe Bryant NBA courtside. That's available. Well, come in, have a hangout. We got muffins and we got other things, and we would love to see you. This is a fun week because we love to share our love of this radio station with the community expressing its love of this station by making their pledges. And so thank you to all of you who have pledged so far. I just saw that Alana Whitley pledged in support of Democracy Now. So Alana, I'm letting you know right now, I've got a pair of Jazz Fest tickets. They're yours. We're going to give away some Jazz Fest tickets, and it's your choice since you're the first person to pledge. But we've got a few pairs of Jazz Fest tickets. Speaking of the Jazz Fest, they are one of the members of our exclusive Golden Guest List contest. You get one entry at the $150 pledge level, three entries at the $250 level, and one lucky winner for each of these things. So we have participating venues. So Side Stage, the Park Theater, the Times Change High and Lonesome Club, the West End Cultural Center, the Handsome Daughter, and then festivals. So Real Love, I mean, the Real Love Summerfest, sadly, RIP, but they continue to put on great shows. Jazz Winnipeg, the Winnipeg Folk Festival, and Sled Island out in Calgary, all participating. Different winner for each of these, you and a guest. And if it's a venue, it's you and a guest on a guest list throughout the year. If it's you and a guest for a festival, it's you and a guest to go to the festival. So the Jazz Winnipeg Festival, if you don't get in on one of the giveaways right now, you still have a chance at winning the Jazz Winnipeg Festival Pass. It's International Jazz Festival Day. We're going to play some jazz in a minute or two. But first, I wanted to spotlight one of the things we do at the station, which is live sessions. We have a really great live band room. One of the things we have put past money from the pledge drive into is buying a backline, so a drum kit, a bass rig, some guitar amps, so the bands can come in and record here at the station. I saw that Earth Angel has a new single out today. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I did get a chance to record with Earth Angel last year. And so I'm going to play you a track from the Earth Angel live session and spotlight the fact that this is one of the things your money goes towards supporting. This is Super Thrift here on 101.5 UMFM. Thank you. Earth Angel with Super Thrift from a live session recorded last March here at UMFM. It is one of the things that we're able to do thanks to your support during Pledgerama. Pledgerama now on until tomorrow night at 8 p.m. You can make a call and donation at 204-474-6610. Smooth operator standing by to take your call. You can also visit umfm.com/donate. If you're on the umfm.com site, you can check out those live sessions. You can check out our merch. And boy, every year we come up with some new designs, some new merch. And I'm always excited to see that merch out in the community. I love spotting old Pledge t-shirts. The hoodies, we actually this year now have a UMFM long sleeve. Really excited about that. I kind of gotten into long sleeves with this prolonged weird spring where it's not warm, a little chilly out. So a long sleeve comes in handy. You can get the long sleeve if you pledge at the $250 level. You get two coffee mugs, two Pledge t-shirts, the UMFM tumbler, long sleeve, and a UMFM hoodie. It's a zip up for those that you know, are discerning about those things. But yeah, that is new this year. Also new this year, We have a new level. It's above the $250 level. It's the $275 level. This one gets everything included that I just mentioned, plus a UMFM Bluetooth speaker that also functions as a charger for your phone. You can set your phone down on top of the Bluetooth speaker. It'll charge it while playing the music. That is a pretty sweet. Also pretty sweet is the fact that we are getting closer to our goal. $29,288.20 right now. The goal, $34,000. We will get there. I am certain of it. I'm going to leave you with a couple of jazz tracks. I mentioned off the top that this is International Jazz Day. I'm going to play another live session. This is from 2014. The Keith Price Trio, which featured yesterday's guest, Curtis Nowosad. He was studying in New York at the time, came in and had a return visit, and they did this cover of the Beastie Boys and KRS-One. We're going to play you that and then some Matt Wild if we have time. We're going to be handing off the microphone shortly. But this is the Keith Price Trio with Hello Brooklyn and 9mm.
Hello, 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 everybody. My levels are too high. Oh, it's a very, very special time of year, is it not? It is Pledgerama. It is our pledge drive here at UMFM 101.5. The time of year where we ask, where we, the fine hosts, fine folks over at UMFM, humbly ask you, our illustrious, generous, charitable listeners, to donate to our annual pledge drive. Because, oh, it's my favorite time of year. Oh, it's Pledgerama. Oh, man. I know I say this every time. I have something very special for you all today. I have an all-local show. This is going to be just straight punk. We'll play like two songs. I'll come back on here. I'll plug our pledge drive again. Play another two songs. Plug the pledge drive. Pledge drive, pledge drive, pledge drive. We are so, so very close to making our goal here. Like, what are we at now? $29,288.20. We just need like another $4,712.80. We're so close. We're right on the line, man. We're right on the line. Now, if you, again, our most charitable listeners, want to help us reach that goal, you can call us at 204-474-6610 or go to umfm.com/donate. Remember, let them know what your favorite show is. I hope it's Migaj Nagamawin, but if it's not, that's fine too. That's fine. I'm not mad at you. You're allowed to have another favorite. I would just like if you donate Migaj Nagamawin. I have done enough talking for now. I'm going to be back. 100% I'm going to be back. But I want to listen to a little bit of music. Because, you know, it's like one of my favorite parts of this show. I have a bunch of bands that we're going to be listening to today. I got Nukeman, Negative Charge, Jug, Human Target, Society Scum, Lackey. And, if we can get to it, a little bit of Ken Mode. Right at the end. And, oh yeah, if you didn't catch that phone number, if I read it a little too fast for you, 204-474-6610 to call in your pledge. This is Nukeman by Nuclear Man. Pledge drive.